Rapid City Public Library podcast series continues. The theme this month, Gone But Not Forgotten, restaurants. We are celebrating the dining establishments in the Black Hills that are no longer in business but still fondly remembered. Please introduce yourself and tell our listeners what restaurant we're going to be talking about today.
My name is David Yaney, and we are talking about the Pirate's Table today.
The Pirate's Table is one that came up on that list quite a bit, pretty well known, very well liked.
Yep.
It was on Sturgis Road, but the building is still there, right?
The building is still there, and I believe it's Hana now, sushi cuisine. Yeah.
I learned something I had no idea in the entire time I've lived here. I always thought it was Pirate's Table. But there was a restaurant before.
There was, yeah. And I believe it was called The Pine Tree. And then at one time it was also Angelo's.
Okay, very good. Now, as you had said, you have a pretty tight tie to the Pirate's Table because?
My grandparents opened it in the mid-80s, actually.
Okay, very cool. Let's talk about that and just some of your memories of seeing the things that they did day to day. And we'll also talk about some of the behind the scenes stuff, of course, but then let's talk about some of your favorite dishes.
Definitely have to say one of my favorite dishes and something we were known for was the prime rib. It was available every single night. My grandpa used the same recipe every single year. And so that was always the one thing that people would come there for.
Okay. A lot of seafood, though, too, right, if I remember right?
Yes, and at the time, we were one of the only places in town that you could get lobster, crab, besides Red Lobster, so it was one of the only places, and we were known for, another one was our shrimp tempura. I still haven't seen one like that in town anywhere.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Am I making this up in my head, or did you guys have turtle soup?
We did not have turtle soup, but we had green ranch dressing. We had green ranch dressing, and people still comment about that to this day.
Like, yeah. How did you make that? What was the recipe?
So it's not even a very cool story. All it was that we made all of our dressings in-house, and when we first opened, the blue cheese and the ranch were so hard to tell apart that my grandpa decided that we would just add a little food coloring to our ranch dressing. Okay. And that really set us apart. I mean, it was really good, but the green had nothing to do with the flavor of it.
Right. But it makes you think it's healthier.
It sure does. And it was unique, you know. People loved they would ask for the green dressing. Didn't even know it was ranch, just the green dressing.
Really?
Yeah.
What were the hours? Were you guys open 7 days a week?
So, no, we were always closed Sundays. Okay. That was a family day, being as that it was a family-run restaurant. That was our day of rest. But in the earlier years, we were open for lunch. But the majority of the time, we were only open for dinner. So, basically from 5 to 8 or 5 to 9.
So you don't run yourselves too ragged trying to work this 12 hours every single day.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So did you ever work there? Let me ask you that.
I did. Being as that it was my grandparents' restaurant, and at the time, let's see, I was 13 years old, and I lived with my grandparents at the time. We were between moving from house to house, and we moved in with my grandparents for a short period of time. And me being 13, my grandpa decided it was time for me to start working.
Okay.
And as the second oldest grandson of his 12 grandkids, I was the first one to start working there. And I believe I worked there the longest, too, out of all my cousins. Yeah, I'm not trying to call my cousins out or anything, but yeah, I worked there from 93 until 2011 when we closed the doors.
Wow, okay. So you started busing?
I did. So I was never a back of house type of person. So I wanted to be up front. So I started off when I was 13. I would come in during the afternoons and do some cleaning. But as soon as I turned 14, I was a busser. And I bused for several years, I think until I was 18 when I could start serving tables.
Okay. And then is that what you did all the way till the end then?
Yeah. So when I turned 18, I was finally old enough to be able to serve alcohol, you know. And so then I started waiting tables, and I didn't want to do anything else other than wait tables. I loved waiting tables there, and it taught me a lot of skills really early on in life too.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
You know, just for fun, is there anything that comes to mind as far as the – Strangest customer request?
There were always, I mean, waiting tables, get tons of different stories from people, you know. And my idea was, I'm going to do whatever it takes to make this table happy. Even if they're rude, even if they're complaining, I'm going to kill them with kindness. Keep smiling, because then it's like, then I still had control of the table, or I still had control of the people. But I mean, I could go on for hours with some of the stories and customers and odd complaints. One I never liked was well-done prime rib. Don't order a well-done prime rib. Yeah.
I mean, it defeats the purpose.
Yeah. It? Yeah. We have an excellent selections of ribeyes that I can suggest to you that we can do well-done, but prime rib well-done is just no longer prime rib.
Okay. did you ever have any celebrity that you served?
Let's see. Not that I can remember, no, unfortunately.
Do you ever have to clean up a food fight?
Well, if kids were messy, it was always kind of a food fight. Never really had any big problems like that, but I did one time actually. This is a story that I still tell to this day. I was serving a group of, I think it was about 10 ladies. All of them were very nicely dressed, and of course I was going to love this table, because I was like, I'm going to handle this table full of ladies, make it an amazing experience for them. When I was serving them their salads, we always served our dressings on the side, and they were in this little seashell-shaped dish, which were horrible to set down on a table because they would always tip over.
Oh.
So I was picking up the salad to hand it to this lady. I pick the salad and the dressing cup off my tray, and I go to set it on the table, and the cup of ranch dressing slips out of my fingers and lands directly upside down in a lady's purse.
Oh, my God.
And nobody saw it. So I finished serving the table their salads, thinking of how I was going to tell this lady that I just dropped some dressing in her purse. And I served the rest of the table, and I finally went up to her, and I just said, "Ma'am, I am so sorry. I accidentally dropped some dressing inside of your purse." And then she looked, and I felt really bad. I felt really bad. I offered to clean her purse for her and to help her out, but she was really nice about it. But it was one of my more embarrassing moments.
Okay. The quote-unquote worst mess, self-inflicted.
It was. It definitely was. Yeah, I mean, luckily I never had a massive problem like dropping a tray of food or anything like that. I did drop a tray of drinks. I was carrying a huge tray full of cocktails, and I got to the tray jack and went to go set it down, and it slipped, and the whole thing went crashing onto the ground. So,
honestly, as someone who has done it very, very little, I'm surprised that it doesn't happen more.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've seen it happen many times, and I just always remember back to the times when I used to do that, and it's an embarrassing moment when all your tables see you spill something.
Were your parents ever involved in the restaurant?
Yes. My mom, she also worked there from the day it opened until the day it closed. My mom started off as a waitress and then ended up being the manager of the restaurant. So my grandparents owned it. My mom, my uncle, and my aunt, both of my aunts, all worked there throughout their lives. My mom and my uncle were there from the day it opened until the day it closed. And then eventually all the family had filtered through and worked there at some point. He, in my opinion, it might be somewhat of a biased opinion, but he created a really unique dining experience in Rapid City. And to my knowledge, there's still not one like it. I mean, it was a very dimly lit restaurant. We had rock walls everywhere, pirate-themed motif. Each table was kind of sectioned off so that each table had an intimate setting. You basically couldn't see another table when you were in there. And I just think that was something that to this day was so classy that my grandpa did. And that's why I think people kept coming back. I mean, the food obviously was amazing, but it was a unique dining experience like Rapid City didn't have.
Yeah. I mean, good food goes a long way. Good service goes a long way. And atmosphere is like that secret ingredient.
It really is. It really is. And it was a special occasion place. You know, I had most of my tables, it was either a birthday or an anniversary or the family goes out for a special evening type of place. And over the years, I had so many people that became my regulars that I would wait on almost every single weekend for years.
Really?
And I mean, I met a lot of Rapid City locals just by waiting on them at the Pirates table. And they remembered me. They remembered my voice. I still get stopped to this day asking if I worked at the Pirates table. So,
nice. Very cool.
working for my grandpa, starting off at such a young age, and he had run a few other restaurants in town before the Pirates Table. He the Chuck Wagon restaurant.
There's one of my favorites.
So. Yep. And I was just a little guy when my grandpa sold that. I think I was only 7 or 8 years old. But I mean, I remember the Chuck Wagon. I remember the giant mural wall. I remember the salad bar. I remember all of that. And he also owned KP Drive-In for a short amount of time. And he had all three of those restaurants for a few years together.
Simultaneously?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so my grandpa was a big restaurateur. And the Bechara name in town are big restaurateurs. My cousins have the Colonial House, which I frequent all the time.
Sure.
So it's, I think restaurant was just kind of in the Bechara blood. So starting off working at 13 years old for my grandpa really taught me a lot of skills that I have found so useful later on in life now. Customer service, understanding how to talk to people, and now I work at a job that completely focuses on customer service. So I think it really, really set it right for me and gave me a lot of good tools for later on in life.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good. Well, David, thank you so much for taking the time to visit with our listeners. And it was great talking about the Pirates Table. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Vesta Wells Johnson remembers some now closed Black Hills area restaurants and bars from a slightly different perspective, that as a performer and musician. In this archival interview recorded in 2015, she talks about some of the Rapid City area night spots circa 1973.
As far as places for entertainment then, this Holiday Inn, the Esquire Club was huge. That was, it is now Lewis Kirkby Hall up on West Main. And that used to be the Esquire Club, which was the elite, really nice, nice dinner club. Very nice. We had that. Canyon Lake Club was a very, very nice music, dinner, dancing club. But we used to go to the Esquire a lot. Esquire and Holiday Inn as far as good bands, good music. And we played the Holiday Inn, where I used to go dance all the time. We used to play, and the Embers, which is now Shooters. And that, once again, had Polynesian decor, the little fake trees and the palms, and it still had that beautiful fireplace that's in the center. Or, well, I don't know if it's there anymore, if that fireplace, or if they have taken that out, I don't recall. But it had a beautiful, huge fireplace that was in the center of the room. And the Embers was a really nice place at the time. It went through its incarnations. It became a biker bar, and we were then settled in Sioux Falls, and remember coming back and, oh, let's go to the Embers. Walk in the door, no colors, leave your fire, or, oh, I think it's changed. This isn't the Embers we remember. And then several other incarnations after that.
So this podcast, of course, we're talking about restaurants and eating establishments that are gone but not forgotten. Please introduce yourself and tell our listeners what restaurant you worked at.
Hi, I'm Lizzie Ludens, and I worked at a fast food restaurant called Bullets.
Bullets, I do remember. I remember eating there quite often. I loved what made them unique. So first of all, when did you work there? When did you start working there?
Oh, geez. It was in 1999. I was only there for a few months. It was towards the end of the year.
Okay. And where that location is now, I think there's like a cell phone company maybe. It's next to the Exxon on La Crosse.
No, it's Blaze Pizza is there now. Yeah, because it's where KFC used to be, across from Wendy's.
Oh, I'm thinking of the other Bullets location.
Oh, the one on La Crosse.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was on Mountain View.
Okay, so the Bullets that you worked at was on Mountain View. Okay. Mm-hmm. And before it was KFC, it was Burger King.
It was?
Yeah, yep. Now Blaze Pizza. Okay, I have it placed correctly now.
Okay.
So Bullets.
Yes.
Bullets, a burger place, but a unique approach.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
It was really, really cool. Like, I don't know why people aren't doing this. You basically order a burger. You get a patty and a bun. That's all they give you. You go to this station with everything you could want for a burger. anything. They have condiments, vegetables, anything you want to put on your burger. You make it exactly how you want it.
So you could basically try a different burger every single time you ordered.
Right. And you can be as picky as you want. You want 2 pickles? You want 15 pickles? You know, you want a dab of ketchup? Like, it doesn't matter. You get to make it yourself.
So, I mean, it's almost like a salad bar, but with all these different toppings and all these different...
Yeah. It was probably like, maybe 6 by 3. I don't know, 3 feet across, 6 feet. And like, just, you know, and then we had to fill the bottom was like full of ice, this long, big tray full of ice. And then we'd restock throughout the day.
Could you get like a double or a triple?
You could get double. And if you wanted a cheeseburger, they'd put the cheese on backstage because it's just easier that way. But they had a very simple menu.
What did they have, like fries, tots? What were the sides that you could get?
I kind of blocked out everything except for the chili cheese fries because there really wasn't anything else that important. Like, that was what I lived for, was those chili cheese fries.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you restocked the toppings bar, what among the patrons was the most popular item? What did you have to restock the most?
Pickles and tomatoes. Yeah. Okay. And that was a pain in the butt.
Expand on that. What do you mean by
that? Well, I guess I was thinking more about, if we're talking about this station, I guess I was thinking more about the ice underneath. That's what I should say that was what the pain in the butt was. It was really heavy and hard to move. And at the end of the night, when a lot of it's melted, it's really easy to make a mess if you're clumsy.
Okay.
I ended up mopping the floor a lot more than I intended to.
Because everything gets pulled out and put back in refrigeration.
Yeah, we cover everything and put it in the fridge for the next day.
When you went on break, or if you ate, what was your go-to topping combination?
Okay, so I am a mayo and ketchup kind of girl. A little bit of lettuce, tomato, and that's about it.
Did you have people that would come in and just get all the spiciest toppings? Like, that was kind of what they were there for, jalapeno or whatnot?
Yeah, to pile it on. Yeah, because you go and you order and you try to say, I need extra. And they put like one extra jalapeno on it. And you're like, no. So you can do it yourself. And it's just really easy ordering process. It made it easy for the employees. You didn't really get a lot of complaints because you can't screw up somebody's order.
What else do you want to talk about?
I've never worked somewhere that had a panic button. I know it's silly, but that was something that always intrigued me. It was
panic
just like if you're standing at the counter and somebody's got you held up with a gun or something, it's right under the counter there.
I feel like, you know, for 99, that was probably pretty rare.
Yeah.
But these days, I think they're a little more prevalent.
Well, it was one of those things, the kid in me wanted to touch it. Like, you know, don't touch it every day.
What happens if I press this button?
Every day it was this thing. It would just stare at me. It was right there.
Okay, you had mentioned chili cheese fries earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Was chili an option as a burger topping?
Ooh, no, but it should have been. I suppose. I bet you there were people out there that ordered the chili cheese fries and then just put some of it on their burger.
Okay.
Man, that's what I want right now.
Chili burger, yeah.
A chili burger. Delicious. Well, they make chili dogs.
Yeah.
Do they make chili burgers?
You can't. Why not?
So why isn't there a place that does this? Like, that was just genius. I think it's genius.
Yeah.
You know?
Here's something that, you know, because I realize now Fuddruckers would let you put your toppings on. They also are not around.
Oh, yeah. There was one in the mall for a while, huh?
Yeah. And I can't imagine that. It's not that people don't like the concept. I just wonder if maybe the overhead was too high or something. It ended up being maybe not cost effective to offer such a wide variety.
When I worked at McDonald's as a kid, you were instructed on exactly what to put on the burger, and it was 2 pickles, you know. And what you're saying kind of makes sense if somebody likes pickles and they overload it, but like half of it falls onto the tray, the paper or whatever, and then they throw it away. Maybe they're getting too much and they're not eating it all. Maybe they're just overloading and running through the veggies and the condiments too quickly.
Could have been. Yeah, because to me, bullets is a great concept, and I'm surprised that it didn't last longer. But in doing these podcasts, it is absolutely astonishing. I mean, it feels like when people came up with a list, you know, there were probably 200 different restaurants that people mentioned. And it's like, wow, I can't believe that all these great eating establishments are gone. So
mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's different reasons for each and every one closing or moving to a different location or whatever. So, well, Lizzie, thank you very much for spending time visiting with our podcast listeners and talking about the late, great Bullets.
It was great talking to you. Thank you so much.
If you owned, managed, worked at, or patronized a restaurant that is no longer around and you'd like to share your memories, we encourage you to reach out to us via email at aludens@rcplib.org or give us a call, 605-394-6139. You are welcome to interview here at the Rapid City Public Library, or you can type up a recollection and one of our librarians will read it for you.